Yesterday in the talk, I made the distinction between thinking and thoughting. It's possible to have simple thoughts, thoughts of recognition. You can be aware that you are hearing a sound, know it's a sound, or you're breathing in, and your simple thought, recognizing that's an in-breath. Wander off in thought and thinking, and simple recognition, oh, that's wandering off. And then there's thinking, which is telling stories and having conversations and having commentary about what's going on. It's not just a simple phrase or word or noun describing what's happening, but a whole description perhaps. And thinking is fed by thinking. The thinking itself, more discursive thinking, is supported, fueled by its own thinking. The more we think, the more we're inclined to think. If we think about thinking, we're still thinking. So one of the ways, there's nothing wrong with thinking, but it's nice to be able to put thinking in perspective with what's the greater picture of what it is to be alive, to be present. So that thinking is not the only way in which we negotiate our life, the only filter through which we are aware of everything. And so in mindfulness practice, meditation practice, we want to expand the horizon to include that part of our lived life, which is more than just thinking. So there's our physical experiences, sensations of the body, sounds, the felt sense of our emotional life, how they live inside our body and our experience. Perhaps the kind of nature of silent awareness, kind of a quiet knowing that is operating all the time as we walk around our life, and we're aware of many things we don't think about. We can open a door without any conscious thinking about the door, but we're aware that it's there. No story. No evaluation, no commentary about the door. There is a recognition of some quiet kind that there's a door, but it's kind of silent. And most of the things we're aware of in that kind of silent way. And to use these non-thinking parts of our life as a way of grounding ourselves so we don't keep feeding our thinking, so we can wake up into a wider life and a more peaceful life than often is the case if we're thinking. And as we get more peaceful, we find that even pleasant thinking, pleasant fantasies, a little bit of drag, a little bit tiring, a bit flat compared to the bigger, wider world of our lived life in all its aspects. So sitting here and taking a couple of deep breaths to connect to your physical body, Breathing in deeply and filling the chest, feeling the chest expand. Even the back rib cage can lift and expand. Feeling the shoulders rise maybe with a deep breath. Noticing how there's increased space between the ribs as you breathe in deeply. And as you breathe in deeply, notice what's going on in your belly. And see if your belly can soften and relax to receive the full in-breath. And then as you exhale, relax and settle into your body. As you exhale, softening the shoulders. As you relax, exhale, softening the belly. And letting your breathing return to normal. Easy, relaxed breath. And take a few moments to feel or sense the stillness just beyond your body, the stillness of this room. The silence which is just beyond the edges of your body. The space beyond the edges of your body in this room. Perhaps noticing how the edges of your body get a bit diffuse in relationship to the space and stillness around it. Then becoming aware of the stillness that's inside of you. There might be places of movement and energy, but notice the places of stillness, the places of silence within. Perhaps there's even a sense of spaciousness within your body. It's there between the sensations. Whatever is not still inside, whatever agitation or tension that's going on, consent to allow it to be there. Allow it to exist in a wider field of stillness or silence or space. It's okay. It's okay. If you remember back to the exercise we did on the hand, in the same way that you brought gentle, careful attention to your hand, bring a careful, gentle awareness to your self-thinking, if you're thinking. Allow yourself to think and just be, know you're thinking. Kind of like you're looking, thinking right in the eye and seeing it. And if the thoughts go away, return to the breathing until you start thinking. And then gently bring your attention to see it clearly. Recognize it, not as a problem, but as something to see directly. Gently holding it in awareness to see what it's like to just hold thinking as opposed to be in thinking. Holding thinking and awareness. See if you can become aware of any physicality, any physical sensations that seem to be connected to your thinking. Maybe some sense of pressure or tension, momentum, tightness, some sense of some part of your body that seems energized. Could be around your eyes or forehead or your jaws, face, in your chest, shoulders, neck, could be the stomach, even the hands sometimes. And if the energy of thinking shows itself somewhere in the body as tension or pressure or energy, as you exhale, see if you can relax that energy, soften the pressure of thinking. And you might also notice if there's any emotion connected to your thinking, entwined with it, or emotions that's the fuel for it. And then gently, softly, let yourself feel the emotion as if it's allowed to be there. And you're just holding it in awareness. And in this way, perhaps you've been respectful of your thinking, to see it clearly, hold it in awareness, feel it how it is in the body, recognize any emotion connected to it. And with this kind of care and respect, now you might gently let it go, or let it recede into the background. And then in the foreground of attention, welcome your breathing, the experience of breathing, into awareness. Welcoming the breathing into the stillness and silence. And if thinking intrudes and becomes strong or predominant, offer it this respect of looking at it clearly, feeling it in the body, but see it silently without any more thinking about thinking, not making it a problem, but simply something to see, and in its own time to let go. When you find yourself thinking, notice how that is like for you. Sometimes you can notice how it contracts attention, awareness, narrows the scope of our lived life. It keeps us in a kind of virtual reality. And then see if you can allow for an alternative to thinking. In an awareness and a mindfulness that is wider, more open, more inclusive. Awareness which is closely akin to silence, spaciousness, that allows, consents for all things to be without being caught in what is entangled. See if awareness can be the alternative to living in your thoughts. So mindfulness or awareness has a capacity to show us freedom in the midst of any experience at all. Not to be caught in experience, but simply to hold it in awareness. And to really find the full potential of this practice, we want to learn how to have that freedom, that awareness, that mindfulness in all experiences. So nothing is outside of the domain of freedom. And that includes being mindful of thinking. And so there's an art to being mindful of aware of thinking, that we're not thinking further, but rather we discover how there's a certain kind of freedom in the midst of our thinking. And one of the most important things that I learned, advice I was given, that moved me in that direction, was the advice, instruction, to not be bothered by my thinking. And don't be bothered by your thinking. Because when you're bothered by your thinking, you're actually fueling more thinking. If you're opposed to your thinking, or critical of it, or upset that it's there, or think it's a problem, there's a way in which you're then engaged in the world of thinking. And it just fuels it, keeps it going. And it's like a little dog who really wants attention, and it's even happy to get negative attention. If he has your attention, you know, and the best thing to do is just ignore the dog. Don't be bothered, ignore it, and then the dog kind of realizes nothing's going on, so it goes away. So don't be bothered by your thinking. But also, if thinking is predominant, strong, you can just turn your awareness towards it, and don't fight it, don't try to let go of it, but just use it as an object of attention, to see it clearly for what it is. And there's a variety of things to explore with thinking. One of the things to notice is whether you think more in words or think more in images. And if you're really aware of that difference, some people do both, but what's going on, it can be a little bit easier and clearer that just an image, it's just the words. One of the things to kind of notice is how much substance your thoughts have, weight they have, or how solid they seem to be, how much authority they come with. Like, this is important, like this is like the most, you know, some of our thoughts can seem, they're just thoughts, right? But what we're thinking about can seem more important than reality. You know, it's like so like solid and important. But thoughts are actually one of the most insubstantial things in the universe. There's no weight to them, and you can't touch them, you know, like touching a hologram. You put your hand through it and nothing happens. There's nothing there, really. And so as we kind of start seeing the nature of thoughts and not being tricked into investing so much meaning in them or authority in them or importance in them, we start seeing them more clearly for what they are. And they start seeming thinner, weaker. And then there's a thinning out of thinking, as opposed to just thinking comes to a stop. It thins out, it gets softer and softer, and less substantial, less grabs us. Just eventually, the image in Buddhism is the thoughts can be wispy, like maybe like clouds drifting through an empty sky. Thought arises and passes, and there's no engagement with it. Just a thought. Doesn't matter what kind of thought it is, just goes by. So thoughts can be part of the practice in terms of clear awareness, but not by thinking about thinking. Just kind of almost like a silent awareness. So do you have any questions this morning that you'd like to ask? Yes, please.
I have a question that's not related to what you just talked about.
Uh-huh. That's fine if it has to do with the practice, yeah. So whether the advantages of keeping the eyes open or the eyes closed, when it's beneficial. The one of the primary reasons that people keep their eyes open when they meditate is so they're less likely to fall asleep. And so I recommend it. You know, if you're really falling asleep, you know, open your eyes and open to pointing down about 45 degrees, so you're not really looking at anything. And then the focus is kind of like loose focus of looking at a mountain in distance, so that you're not really taking in sights, you know, focusing on anything. But your eyes are open and there's light coming in. And some people find that it's easier to stay present. They're less likely to drift off in thought that way. Some people find the opposite is true. They're more likely to think when their eyes are open. So you can experiment. That's the primary reason. There are some other reasons in Soto Zen why they emphasize keeping the eyes open, but you know, that's the, I think I understand the primary reason. And in Vipassana, one of the reasons to keep the eyes closed is that we're trying to feel or be really present for something, kind of like one sense at a time. So for hearing, just hearing. For feeling something tactile in the body, just feel it fully. And it's kind of like if some people, if they're going to listen to a very faint sound far in the distance, they might close their eyes so that they more fully can hear the sound with the eyes closed. Or if you're listening to good music, some people like to close their eyes because it really takes it in. So because we really want to connect as fully as we can with an experience, and one sense at a time, is sense door at a time, is supported by that. And we spend plenty of time on retreat with the eyes open. So the advantages of practicing with the eyes open and being aware of the wider world happens in walking meditation and outside. And the other reason for the eyes closed, which was given to me by Upandita, and which I think it's really true for some people, that for some people, as they get more and more concentrated and still, the eyes will naturally close. It kind of actually supports a deeper, deeper concentration, more than if the eyes are open. But either way is fine. Yes, Kevin.
There's something you said yesterday about working with pain that I just was curious a little bit about. You spoke kind of, talked about deconstructing pain as in kind of as not a skillful thing to do so much. And you didn't really elaborate. So
I see, yeah.
No. Be a little unclear.
Yeah, that makes sense. What I was trying to say is some people use mindfulness in the deconstruction process, going really deep, as a form of, they're motivated by aversion, they're trying to get rid of something. And people who are somewhat skilled at mindfulness can sometimes do that for a while. And I think anybody who practices meditation for some time, sooner or later develops the ability to avoid their pain, by just getting a little more concentrated, a little more focused, a little bit more use their mindfulness. And, you know, it's certainly a relief to do that. It's nice. But to do it on a regular basis and to use it as an escape rather than to really be with what is can be a problem if it's reinforcing that. However, as people settle in and deeper, that kind of deconstruction process happens on its own. But it doesn't have to be motivated by trying to get rid of it. Is that?
Yeah.
That's what?
Mm-hmm. There can be a kind of dissolving.
Yes.
But if there's aversion in there, then that's the
exactly. Problem. Exactly. That's what I was trying to say yesterday, was the aversion part. And yes, Nancy.
If a thought comes up that I think might have some insight, has will it just come back if I just go back, just stay with what's there instead of following it, if it truly is an insight as opposed just to another thought?
Well, there's different, people use the word insight in different ways. I like, all insights are good, but I like to distinguish insights with a small I and a capital I.
Capital I.
Well, capital I doesn't...
Will that just be there then? I don't need to attend to it.
Yeah, yeah. Capital I insights, for the most part, don't need any thinking involved. But there are some, and I think that if you... I mean, there are some insights that come along with mindfulness that are part of mindfulness practice, more than the three characteristics, other things that come along. And that can have such a big impact that it's natural to mind kind of linger with it or think about it for a while. And I think that if, so you don't intentionally think about it, don't pick it up and get involved, keep doing your practice, but if those thoughts still kind of circulate and come through and are there, that could be an important part of the digesting of it. Probably if you think I can answer quickly in 1 minute. No, I'm sorry, because we're, so then maybe some other time you can leave a note or apologize. Okay, so, when we bought this property, this whole floor up here was not built out. It was all plywood and 2x4s and kind of very open. And we wandered around the building to see if we could, where we would put the meditation hall. And came into this big room here. It was actually much bigger than this room. Just plywood floors and no walls, just 2x4s in the wall. All the way up to this, to the roof. And when we stepped into this room, everyone said, "This is the place." There was something about the stillness that was in this area here, even before it was a meditation hall. This is the place. When we took possession of the property, it had been a nursing home before us, so there'd be people here and things. And then we did the final possession, and we went to the real estate company, got the key, and came back, and no one was here anymore. It's like we were it. We were the owners, right? So we came in. And when we drove in and went into the parking lot, I was really surprised how amazingly still the property was. The kind of stillness in that place. The cars were driving by, but some stillness. I said, "Wow, we brought a good place. I didn't know the place was that still." So I don't know if you or even I will feel that level of stillness today, but it's really special to be here on retreat. It's really have a full day here, and you might allow consent to let more stillness and silence support your practice, be the container or the context for how you go through the day, and as you care for your practice for the day. It's a beautiful day, wonderful day, opportunity to really give yourself to the practice as fully as is appropriate for you. Thank you.